Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Beth Ellicott.
You're listening to the midweek version of Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for ground claw stabbers.
Oh, stabbing.
We're stabbing today. Yes, we are. This week, we're sponsored by Avlia Mediterranean Folk Embroidery, which is a good thing.
Yeah,
Avlia, A-V-L-E-A, avlia.life is the URL. Different, weird. I didn't know about the life one. Obviously it's an extension that works, but it's a good one. Easy to remember, but you're so used to .com that
you have to remember that little oddity.
Yeah. So avlia.life, new design, Evanthia, which I like that one. They have to get that. And then in September, 20% off of bit kits, which are the small kits. And so the code is bitkitlove. And it's right there on the homepage, so you can find it. But 20% off on bit kits, that's pretty good. And then I was checking out, she has a nice collection now of demos and videos. So if you've never cross-stitched, she has a demo of a video right there to show you how to do it, and several others. But then I was looking at she also has these, offers some finished embroidery pieces. And so she has a selection of those there, machine and handmade. And I was going to ask you about this because two of them are Copanelli, which looks like some kind of a lace, and they're beautiful.
I didn't get that far. I got stopped. I started looking around and I was like, oh, look at that one. I was back at the cross stitch. I didn't even get over there.
Yeah. Well, check out the Copanelli finished pieces. They're beautiful.
And did you, I don't know if people are following her on Instagram, but the one she's going to release soon, the Ukrainian crisscross.
Yes.
Okay, the pattern that was made from a printed plastic shopping bag out of Kiev.
Yes.
Oh, I love that one. The blue and white one.
Yep.
That was shaped the blue. Oh, I can't wait till she releases that one.
Coming up, yeah. Yeah, she's pretty creative. Krista West there at Avlia. She is pretty creative. So, yeah, go check that all out. Avlia.life, 20% off bit kits. And yeah, watch for that. And then, yeah, hunt down the in the finished embroidery, the Copanelli. I think I'm saying that right. Copanelli pieces. She needs to make kits for those. Yeah, she does.
We'll have to pester her about that.
Right, yeah. We'll get a bunch of emails fired off. Make kits.
Make kits.
Yeah. So tonight, pretty excited tonight. We have our second live tour with Gallery 76 of the Embroiderers Guild Galleries in New South Wales in Sydney, Australia. For those of you who are figuring out time zones, Sydney. So 8 o'clock Eastern on the YouTube channel, the Fiber Talk YouTube channel, we have the live tour of the Secret Garden. And that's going to, I'm anxious for this to happen, quite frankly.
It looks like it's going to be an exceptional show.
Yes. Yes. And
I mean, the last one with the Rakama was beautiful. The gloves from the exhibit for sure. I'm like, oh, blow that up. I got to see what those are.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the thing. I kept blowing up the photos, trying to see more of them. And of course, yeah, there's a limit. So I'm really anxious to see those in the exhibit. Yes. Yeah. Yep. And it's opening day. So this will be Wednesday night, which is Thursday morning in Australia. And we'll be seeing the show about an hour before the exhibition opens to the public. So we're getting it as fresh as you can get it. And then Sharon Peoples and Belinda Jessup, the two artists who put the artwork together, the needle art, machine embroidery together, all the designs, they will be there and they will be joining us tonight. So we'll get to communicate with them, ask them questions, hear from them about the various designs. And, of course, April will be there to tour us around. And, This is going to be good. This is going to
be
good.
A great show.
Yep.
I'm excited.
Yeah. So 8 o'clock on the YouTube channel, Fiber Talk YouTube channel, wetalkfiber.com/YouTube. If you are not a subscriber, we'll get you there. And then always easiest to subscribe. And then you get the notifications automatically. So that's going to be good. Our second one in the tour. Yeah.
And there's, you know, we just can't go to Sydney right now. So this is the next best thing.
We can't go anywhere right now.
We're stuck at home.
Never thought I'd see the day we'd be locked into our own country, but we are.
We are.
Yep. So, yeah, but that's just it, you know, to see that kind of artwork from Australia and up close and be able to ask questions.
Yeah, talk to the artist. That's even harder unless you happen to snag tickets to the opening show or, you know, where the artists happen to be there.
Yeah. Yeah, because most of those exhibits, they're there for the opening night and then they're out. Yeah.
Right.
Yep. So that's going to be good. So 8 o'clock, pass the word to others and join us. It'll be fun. It will be fun. No Friday show. We're taking Friday night of the Labor Day weekend off. And so there won't be any show. Shutting the machines down Friday. That's it. Stopping for a day.
Good plan.
Yep. So no Friday show, but we will have a Sunday podcast, regular Sunday podcast. And that will be Kimberly Jolly from the Fat Quarter Shop. Did that with her some time ago. And so we'll be sharing that on Sunday, Kimberly Jolly. And then we'll be back the week after with our Wednesday and Friday shows. And if you're interested in being a guest on a Friday show where we get to talk to stitchers and look at their work and talk about their various projects, let me know, Gary@wetalkfiber.com. Send me an email because I'd like to line up those people in advance. So if you're interested in doing a Friday show with us, it's pretty easy to do. It really is quite easy to do. And you're only on camera for a short while, so if you're camera shy, it's not that big a deal. And
easy.
Yeah. But we have a lot of fun. I like doing those shows and talking to stitchers. I think it's fun.
Right. It's always fun to see what, you know, how they progress through time, see what they started with and
yeah.
what they're doing now.
Yep. Well, and you pick up tips too, you know. I don't think we've had one yet where we didn't learn something.
Right.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's the usual thing. Stitchers get together and you all learn something you didn't know before.
So, right.
Yep. So if you're interested, because it was last Friday that we had Cheryl on and we learned about dyeing and art quilt work. And I learned all kinds of things.
Eco printing. And
yeah. That I, you know, the eco printing is interesting. And using natural dyes fascinates me, just the chemistry mm-hmm. part of it. But the ice dyeing is the one that keeps that's amazing.
It is. And I really think, well, see, Cheryl and I might just have to get together and buy different kinds of ice and see which one we see what, and do a controlled where we use the same dye color and the same folds, because that makes a difference. And then different ice cubes and show you what it looks like, because it does make a difference. It would be nice if we had snow, but I'll wait for that for quite a while. Quite a while.
Well, that was the thing when we were talking to her about ice dyeing, and then I started going in my mind, I just started going through all the various forms of frozen water, you know, and like you said, then a controlled thing, what happens with each one. So if you take snow or slushy ice, or crushed ice, or cubes, you know, what happens? And
right.
Yeah, that's a cool process. It really is.
It is. Yeah. It's tons of fun. It is, and it's like, it's a surprise. You kind of can, you have an idea about what will happen when you open up your fabric.
Yeah.
But you're never exactly sure.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Because that it intrigued me the way that, I mean, it only makes sense because you can do it with pen ink, separate all the colors out, like just take a felt pen, put a dot on the cloth and put some water on it and put it on a slant, and you'll see the colors separate. And that happens with ice dyeing. And yeah, you get some pretty bizarre stuff. Almost better than tie-dyed, I think. It kind of has that look to a degree, but it's better.
Oh, you have to see it live in person. It's totally, because we tie-dye too. Uh-huh. Totally different look. It's the ice crystals do something, and it fragments it out. I'm using my hands, so you can't really see them. It spreads out that dye, so it bleeds differently. It is so cool. And certain dyes are just perfect for that. I have a color from Dharma called Dutch Chocolate, and I didn't realize it had blue in it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it might have red, but I didn't see any of that. And I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to have to ice dye with this color because I've got to see how it separates out.
Right, right. Well, that's just it. Yeah, your darker colors, you're going to get more colors out of it, more of the spectrum out of it. Yeah.
Well, or it depends on the dye.
So they don't always separate then.
Right, and some are better than others. I mean, there's some colors that just... I'm trying to think of one that we've used a lot that really, and I'm just drawing a blank right now, but some of them just, they have, you know, every time you use it, you're going to get a fabulous result. So we buy it specifically so we can ice dye with it.
Uh-huh. What fun.
It is.
You guys have a great time dyeing cloth. And I was going to ask you, these are not very big pieces that you're dyeing, are they?
Well, it depends. So I dyed all the fabric for a king size quilt. Well, not all the fabric. I dyed most of the fabric for a king size quilt for my parents that I made. I couldn't get a good black. So I finally gave up and just went and bought some. So for that, I dyed yards and yards of fabric. I laid it out in my backyard. I think we had a tarp. And I literally took the dye and just spread the color across. Oh, it came out so cool. And then I cut it up to make the quilt. And yeah, that was lots of fun. Yeah, so we do yards. We do yards and yards at a time. Or we do a fat quarter or a fat eighth.
Okay, some cloth of size then. Okay. I thought you were doing little swatches with this stuff.
We do that too.
Okay.
We actually have notebooks that have little color swatches in them. So when we first started, Cheryl, myself, and another friend, Sue, we each picked a colorway. We dyed it, and then we gave it. Everybody got a little square from all the 30 colors, and it made like a rainbow. And then we had all three different colorways. And then that was fun. So we did it again until we'd done all the different colorways this company had. And we put it into a notebook. And then we decided to take a class where she taught us how to do, I want to say 100 different color swatches. I'd have to pull that book up.
Wow.
With tints and tones. Yeah. So every now and then I pull that out and I'm like, okay, I need this color. So how do I make it?
Mm-hmm.
And now, you can do that.
When you get serious about this stuff, I'm sure you keep meticulous records so you can repeat and with consistency, but do you guys bother to write down what you're doing, or is it just for the fun of seeing what happens?
It depends. So, so if I know, there's certain colors I can make, you know, there's a colorway we call Flower Garden. I can measure the dyes out for that and get the colors, those colors pretty consistent.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I've dyed thread. So I know Flower Garden or Prism are my two favorite colorways. So if I need colors from that, I know how to make those. Threads again. There'll be a slight variation. Maybe I didn't measure exactly perfectly.
Yeah.
I didn't put in the exact amount of water in my Dimex, but it's close enough that you'd say it's the same dye lot. You know, it'd be the same. It'd be maybe a different dye lot, but you could say, okay, yeah, I can blend these two colors.
Right, right. Now, when, so, yeah. is thread different?
Dyeing factor.
Yeah. Yes.
If you just dump a skein of floss into your dye, it'll dye. There, it will take the dye, but the problem is rinsing it. Whereas I throw my fabric after I've rinsed it into the washing machine. You can't do that with floss.
Yeah.
So we use DMC's floss bows. We stick it on those in a pipette in a bag, and you can make very. I'm doing it with my hand again. You can't see me. I'm patting it down. I'm massaging the dye through the. Through the fibers.
But yeah. Yeah, I can't see that.
Can't see that. Right. And pearl cotton. That's the other I've done. And then Cheryl has done. I had someone gave me Swedish linen thread. Mm. And she's a weaver and she's Swedish. And I said, oh, you need this, Cheryl. And she hated the colors. So of course she threw them in a dye bath. And linen thread, she said, oh, Beth, it dyed beautifully. So which I should have figured, because yeah. Linen is a natural fiber,
right,
plant, so
it
should take the dye just like cotton does.
Yeah. Now when you get DMC, say I'm gonna dye some DMC, you just buy the white, just regular white?
Sometimes I ran across something I had dyed, and I was looking at it because it's a purple, but it looks really gray. And then I remembered I had some very, very light gray floss that I bought, and I dyed it with a kind of grayish purple. And so it's a really pretty variegation, but you already have that base. So if I had just dyed it with the purple, you might have had a little white at the ends where the it wraps around the floss, DMC floss thing. But with the gray there, it just kind of variegates really nice right there. So okay. A gray base, a pink base even, a really, really light or a light, light blue. But you have to think of color theory. So if you have a blue, let's see, you can do a red, you can do a yellow. But if you don't want to make up maybe an ugly brown.
Yeah.
If you add too many colors, you're going to get brown. So. Yes, it's a lot of fun. It's very addicting. And normally when I dye, if we're doing a lot of it, if I'm going to do something where we get together, and I will make sure I have floss ready to go, because inevitably I'm like, I need this color in floss. I need to make sure I dye some threads, because I'm going to want them when I get to making a project out of this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, when you take, all right. I thought you just always used white DMC, but that's a finished thread. So do you have to do something to it so it will take the dye better?
Soda ash. You dump it in soda ash.
Okay. So that does it. That takes the,
it does it. It takes some of the finish off. And so that's why I massage it in where, with fabric, you either buy prepared for dyeing or you prepare your fabric. Like Mary Corbett says, she boils the stuff. I don't boil my linen if I'm going to do it. I do give it a good wash. And even then, I have found I'll have spots where it's resisted. The dye is resisted wherever it hasn't come all the way off. So I do try to wash it at least once in hot water. If it's a linen like that, I know it shrinks it, but what else can you do?
Right, right. You just have to. Yeah.
You have to.
So then you have been able then to dye a cloth and then also dye a thread to either match it or be complementary in some way. And right. So you literally can sit there in your kitchen and have a project in mind and create your own colors for it.
Yes. And how many I threads have I created and I haven't had a chance to finish using them?
Uh-huh. Now, oh, that's, yeah, that was the other question I had for you. Of course, dying, not anywhere on our list of things to talk about today, but oh well. When you dye the thread, then does it stitch just like regular DMC, or because you've altered it, is it weird?
It's not. I find the pearl cotton has lost its, you know how pearl cotton kind of has a sheen?
Right.
So it loses some of that.
Mm-hmm.
But it stitches the same. It's not maybe as shiny. And because you have, you know, it's caustic. Soda ash is caustic.
Right, right.
I leave it in for 24 hours and then I stop the dyeing process by starting to rinse, especially the fibers. If I don't get, or if I'm doing linen, the cotton fabric, I don't worry so much about. I'll stop it. I'll rinse it a little bit, but I've left that for like a week and said, okay, I'm going to come back to you later and rinse you.
Mm-hmm.
But with threads, I normally try to make sure I get them a good, good, good rinse and put a little soap in with them. And just to make sure that reaction has stopped.
Yeah.
More worried about the caustic of the soda ash than the dye itself.
Oh, okay. Okay. So you got to make sure that gets neutralized some way.
Right. Yeah. Right. And rinsing, that's the one thing people don't like when they do threads. It's rinsing those threads. And because it just takes a long time. And I like red. And red and purple are notorious. They're just harder to get that dye out.
Yeah. The excess, you mean. Yeah.
Right, right. So it doesn't bleed while you're working with it.
Yeah. So, and the only way to do that is just to wash it and wash it and wash it.
Correct. Right, right. And yeah. That's why it, on those little floss bow things, makes it so much easier than anything else.
So you put them on the floss bow to start rather than after you've dyed them.
Right. You start with them on there.
Hmm.
And you always want to make sure you do plenty, because just in case, you don't want to run out.
Right. Right. Yeah.
I mean, you can make another batch of dye, but again, it's not, unless you're very, very careful about your dyeing process and very, very exact, you're going to run into issues with it changing just a slight amount.
Yeah.
And you could work with that, but you do have to work with it then.
Right. Can't just run to the store and get another skein.
No.
Doesn't work.
No.
Fascinating. Yeah, but I can tell, you know, watching you and Cheryl in your posts, I can tell that you guys are literally addicted to it. I mean, I can tell you're just egging each other on and having fun doing it and learning things.
Right. Well, before COVID was going to shut us all down, we were going to have a dye workshop at our local library. That's normally where we do our dyeing. They have a big room and we set up tables. And Cheryl and I generally get together and I help her prepare the dyes. It's kind of nice if there's 15 people coming to the dye workshop, if you have someone else there to help you mix them.
Yeah.
So, and then we dye lace, and then it's fun to see what people are doing with the dyes too. Mm-hmm. Just get a creative group of people.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. You get all walks of life, all different kinds of things and different ideas. And yeah, it just goes crazy. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And it's always fun. Always fun.
It's one thing about this hobby. You get bored.
It's never boring.
Yeah,
never
you get bored with this. Go try that. Yep. There's always something. All right. We'll learn more. We got you in the works to do a live show one night, too. So more dying to come.
More dying to come.
Yeah. So Royal Garden. Okay. Yeah. We did last Wednesday. You showed how to stitch the Amadeus.
Is that what I did?
Yes, you did.
Yes. Okay.
And so I have to connect that video with the group of videos that's on the Fiber Talk page for those who are doing it. Have not done that because I just forgot till just now. So I'll be doing that. I've been working on mine. I got all the waffle stitches done. And I started the scotch stitches that go around there. And then the Amadeus and other things go in the side of them. And it looked like my canvas had kind of a kilter to it, kind of an angle to it.
Oh.
Yeah. And I thought I had it on square because I'm pretty meticulous when I mount the canvas to make sure that it's square. And that the threads are square, not the, you know, because mm-hmm. I don't like to have it, have it blocked after the fact.
Right.
And so I got the square out, and sure enough, it was off.
Oh.
Like the threads are at an angle. So I spent last night, just about the entire evening, I took it off of the frame and trying to get it straightened out. You know, trying to tack it back down and pull it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it would be squared up. And I got it better. It's better, but it's not perfectly square. And I don't know, the canvas, if it's not square when you start, you know, you just kind of move it. But it would be like the horizontal. Yep. The horizontal, I'd put it on there, and it was just weird. It wouldn't straighten up, so.
Well, and here's my question. So it's not your bars, right?
No, I checked those. They're dead squared, right on.
Okay, now how old is that canvas?
Old. The chart, she released the chart in 13, and I bought the kit right after that. But it's been stored, rolled up since then.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah, and I wouldn't, not unless the canvas itself was bad.
Yeah.
But that'd be weird. I mean, I just can't imagine that. I'm looking at mine, and I'm like, yeah, no, that is strange.
Yeah.
But it's not square.
Right. And it's the horizontal, you know, whether it's the warp or the weft, I don't know because I just have it mounted on there. But if I put the square on horizontal, it's the vertical that won't line up. And, oh, I jerked and pulled on that thing and tacked it down and tacked it down again. And I did improve it. I did improve it. But after 3 hours, it was like, all right. Enough. It's close enough. It's just going to have to be. And I think I can get away with it in general because of the nature of the design.
Right.
You know, there's so many curves and swerves and open areas that I'm not too worried about it in the final analysis. But still, right. it was just weird.
Because you have Evertights or the adjuster frames or whatever. Right. So even when you tighten the little nut thing, it didn't kind of stretch it and make it straight.
I tried that. I tried tightening one corner and loosening another corner and other. I could not get it to behave.
Oh man.
So.
See, because mine was kind of had a wave in it, and uh-huh. I put it on and off twice.
But
I tightened it and it just kind of. In fact, I was just feeling mine now, and I think I need to tighten my. Because I've got so much stitching on it. All the edges need to be tightened.
But. Yeah. You know, something that I just had a thought. I wonder if I take that off. I don't know if I want to now. Because I did. I spent a whole entire evening doing it. I wonder if I take the artist tape off, if that was preventing me from getting it off the edges, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because it's... Maybe, but it should. Do you have is one side a salvage edge?
Yes. Okay. Yes. And I have that on the left.
Uh-huh.
But I wonder.
I don't want to take it off again. No, I know what you mean. It's like, oh, I just want to be done. I want to stitch on this.
Right. I may have to suck it up and try that because I did not think of that last night. taking the tape off and see if that gave me enough flexibility, because I don't have to move it maybe between maybe a 16th of an inch and it'll square up. You know, it's not much.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's at an angle, so if I measure from the bottom of the canvas, you know, it just gets worse and worse as you go to the top. And wow. So it becomes, you know, it starts to push an eighth of an inch.
Yeah.
All right.
Could you take off just one side of the tape? Well, no, because you're going to have to take it all off anyway. Right. Never mind.
I think I'm going to have to give that a try. I think I'm going to have to take it off of the canvas again, or off the frame again, and take the tape off. And see if I can get that to square up.
Let us know how it goes.
Yeah, I think it's worth a try. I've invested this much in it. I think I'm going to dig in and go.
Right.
Yep.
Right, and you're not that far in. I mean, you got the set of Scotch stitches. Because you don't, the next set of stitches, I mean, yeah, you've got the Walnetto and all that in there. But you've got those big old long... were they road stitches, I guess, that are with the neon rays. And if that isn't squared up and you're fiddling with it, then you're going to start distorting those stitches.
Right. Right.
And that's going to be a problem.
Yeah. So, all right, I got to take the tape off and give that a try. So there we go. We learned, just talking about it, learned something there. All right. I'll give it a try.
Might as well.
Yeah. You know, why not? Cause
happy with me. You won't be happy with it.
No, that's just it. Just it. It's been it. It just, I don't know. It just got it caught in the right light when I finished those waffle stitches. There's an angle there. I thought that was square when I put it on the frame, and there's an angle. And now then it just kept bugging me. And so, yeah, I gotta take another run at it. Gonna have to. Yeah.
Right. Well, here and now, I have a question for you. When you use the silk, I'm looking at my silk lamé, which isn't laying too flat. Do you kind of untwist it and lay it when you're doing like a long stitch with it?
Untwist, you know,
it's kind of twisted. That thread is it's slightly twisted together. And so it looks like it's a bunch of strands of silk with a sparkly thing in it.
Oh, the silk. No. I leave it twisted. I try not to untwist it. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, because I was trying to lay it with the inside those crescents. You know, I'm doing whatever Jessica Grimm did because she's brilliant.
Yes.
And it's untwisted. And then I think, well, maybe I should untwist it and lay this and get a smoother look.
No, I don't think you'll like that.
Okay.
Because I think you'll lose the effect of the metallic that's in there.
Yeah.
No, I don't think you want to do that. Plus, that stuff tends to snag and come apart anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't do that. Mm-mm. No, I think that'd be a mistake. Yeah. Leave it the way it comes off the card. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and speaking of Jessica Grimm, side note, she has a new goldwork class that she's getting sign up for. So check that out.
Yeah.
Looks interesting.
It does.
Yep. And then we were talking about the Presentia floss, mm-hmm. which is when you separate it out, the strands are thinner than DMC. And so I was doing the Scotch stitches, which calls for three strands. And if you don't lay them just right, it doesn't cover.
Right.
And so then you and I had an exchange about three or four. And you said you went three because you only had one skein.
Right.
And I have two skeins of each color. And so I did a little test on the side. And I'm definitely going four.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I even normally use four when I'm using DMC because I like that fuller coverage.
Yeah.
But I had a feeling once I started – and I was using three, I thought, and I made a mistake and had to rip. I thought, I might run out if I only have one skein. So I stayed with three. I just stayed with it. More because I was afraid it would be hard to get that thread, that single. Because I don't know who carries it locally. I guess I could have called Kim.
Kim, yeah. Kim will have it. She has plenty of it. So yeah, but you're down the road now. So
right, right.
No,
maybe,
maybe
I'll get another skein of the light purple and do two.
Yeah, yeah, because it does. It looks very nice. I did the four, and it's worth it. It's worth it. So I'm going with that. And plus, then I can just do a loop start on each time too, which is a nice plus. But
yes.
It filled out and it's going to give nice plump Scotch stitches. So that's definitely doing that. But I got to get that canvas squared up first. Darn it! Yeah. Well, you can't. I mean, the further you go, it just gets impossible after a while. So
right.
Right now, that small square I have in the middle, I can jerk that around and get it to square up.
Right. But like once you start laying those long, long stitches, then right. You're not going to be wanting to jerk at it.
No, no. So, all right. Tape comes off. Try again. And I need to find tacks. You know those tacks that you get that all the needlework stores sell, the brass tacks?
Yes.
That I have. Well, we all have a ton of them. But right. I need to find a tack that's sturdier. Because it seems like every box of those you get, almost a third of them are basically one-use tacks. And then they bend going into the wood or coming out. Or I had a couple of them where the pin part snapped off the head. And
ooh, yeah.
I got to find a sturdier tack. There's got to be like industrial-grade stack tacks, you know?
I have three on this piece because I just pulled the ones that I could find, but they're big fat things. I'm trying to think which designer sold them to me because I have another bag of them in my basement. Let me see if I can send you. I don't even know if they have a manufacturing name.
Yeah, that's just
like
the thing.
A stack of them. I have to, someone will remember, probably Deb DeCrane will remember Deb, if you're listening, you send me an email.
Yeah. Cause
I'll email her. She'll remember who sold those to us. And, cause they're bigger. They're maybe not quite dime size.
Oh my.
Yes. And this, and I, like I said, I took a class from her. A workshop, and they're thicker. They've got a bigger post,
yeah,
in them, a little bit bigger.
Because got to have tacks that are not one use tacks. Mm-hmm. Got to have something that's sturdier. Because like last night, I mean, I pulled a ton of tacks out two or three times, and I was developing a pretty good little pile off to the side of ones that had bent when I pushed them in, and you can't really straighten them back out. And I'm sure I'm not going to take the time to straighten them out. I'm sure if you wanted to fiddle with them, you could, but it's not gonna. And I thought, man, these things, I got to have a more durable tack. So,
and these are bigger. What I don't like about them is when you have to go to removing them, I can't use whatever the tool is. I have to use a little screwdriver to pull them out.
Okay.
So, and that's why I don't care for them as much, but I do have quite a few of them. They are much sturdier. And for something like this, it's just such a big piece.
Right.
I probably should have used more of them because they hold better. They're just a bigger area holding down across.
Well, see, and I don't mind taking them out, making an extra effort to take them out, because ideally, or in 90% of the cases, you should only have to remove them one time.
Right.
So I don't mind that part, but I just feel like when they come out, they should be usable again. And
right. These are. So yeah, I'll get back with you on that one.
Okay. I'll be curious to know. Yeah. Oh. Yep. So there's my saga. And you're cooking right along on yours, right?
Right. I'm at the Crescent.
Okay. You're flying.
Have the weaving underneath, which I found fascinating because most people, you know, like she had the Molnetto and she had the little Jessica in the center.
Right.
But then we're doing these, well, she has the weaving, but then Jessica said to do the other. But anyway, it just is such a nice effect under there. And it just got me, my little brain a-going. I thought, oh, this is so nice. I wonder if he even just had like a neon raise and did a long satin stitch underneath some of these stitches. It would give a different color than your canvas. You're not doing some, so it's flat. So flat and shiny versus the round Jessica, which is raised and shiny, gives you a different texture.
Yeah.
And that's what I like about these sort of counted canvas needlepoint pieces is the texture you're getting. I'm just looking at the picture now. So next to those crescents, she's got, I don't know what those are, some sort of little woven cross things in a light green. But they almost recede back into the canvas. So you've got all this depth going on with the piece.
Right.
Which I find interesting. That's what makes this one fun for me to stitch.
Yeah. And I think that's what's, well, you can, you know, people say, well, you can do the same thing with painted canvases. But I find the texture, the dimension that you get out of these counted canvas pieces, yeah, you use a lot of different threads and different colors and blah, blah, blah. But the texture that you get, it, to me, is as much fun as anything.
Right. And I know what you're saying. I've got several painted canvases in my stash, but there's something for my math mind. It's the geometrics. Mm-hmm. My kids always tease, are you doing another geometric? I'm like, yes, I love these.
Yeah.
So, but there's something about that, the geometry of them that I like.
Right.
This is a painted canvas.
Yeah. It's the geometry, but it's the symmetry. It's, you know, mm-hmm. everything balanced, everything just so, yeah.
Right.
Yet within that symmetry is all kinds of variation.
Right. And
yeah. No, I'm with you 100%. That's why I do those. And don't do painted canvas because, you know, but, you know, I've said it 100 times, you know, the people who really know how to do painted canvas is absolutely astounding what they can do. It really is.
Right. And what they, it looks, some of them are just gorgeous, how they make them come out.
Oh yeah. Mm. Yeah. Yep. And, I did want to mention we talked about the Case Creation floor stand. And mine's a really old model, and of course I'm holding it using this big 17 inch square stretcher bar on that thing. Man, that thing is I've tightened it down pretty tight so it doesn't sag. And I'll tell you, that thing holds, and that old black ball that they use in the head there, geez, I tell you, you'd think it'd just say enough of you and give way, but nope, it's working.
Yeah, it's on my Christmas list this year.
okay. Okay. And then I do want to offer this. I mentioned the stowaway stand that I have that I was using with Hannah Longstreth. A little tip, those clamps, they're fairly standard design that have three bolts. They have the one that goes in the back and then the two with the knobs that you actually clamp down on your piece. Mm-hmm. I don't remember where I picked this up, but when I got that stowaway stand, the bolts were not long enough, and so I couldn't get my Millennium frame, the side pieces, in there like they should be. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why I didn't think of this, but I read somewhere, I just went to the hardware store, and instead of 3.5 inch, I got 4 inch carriage bolts, because they're just standard carriage bolts. Got 4 inch carriage bolts. Now I can take any size. Just replace those bolts, and that thing opened right up, and I put the Millennium frame in there and clamped down. Perfect. Yep.
Yeah. What a thought.
Because, you know, I mean, it's just conventional hardware. It cost me all of 20 cents, I think, to get the carriage bolts. And, yeah, and so then, you know, if you got a bigger stretcher bar or side clamps on your scroll frame, just go get longer bolts. And
yeah.
Yeah. Perfect.
Perfect.
So yeah, that was good. I was going to ask you about these challenges. You and Cheryl are always doing these challenges. Like you're doing, what are you doing? Autumn challenge?
No, it's September sewing challenge, I think is what we, she named the hashtag. She's like, I have no brain. That's what we're calling it. And I'm like, okay. For years, she would do, we followed someone who did the 100-day project. And it's like 100 days of doing the same thing. I don't know. And then one year, Cheryl took the plunge. She did it. And she goes, you got to try it, Beth. And I was like, But I think there's something about, I did last year, 2019, I did 100 days. And I said, I'm going to stitch every day. That was my said thing I was going to do. Well, I stitch pretty much every day. But what I needed, what I challenged myself with was to post a photo on Instagram every day, which is a whole different ball of wax. But doing those challenges, it gets you from what you normally do, and it makes you kind of think outside the box. So we were traveling at the time. We traveled to London. So I had to have whatever project I was working on for 100 days had to be portable, and I had to work on it enough so that you could see when I posted a picture that it looked different than the other day.
Right.
The last. And that was a challenge. That made, and so I had to, you know, and it was just cross stitch. I shouldn't say just cross stitch, but it was, and I only do so much cross stitch. I'm not a fast cross stitcher.
Yeah.
So it was a challenge, and to make it interesting and to do something a little different. So it looked a little different every time I posted. But then Cheryl, you know, with the lockdown, she says, well, I'm going to count down the days until we're out of lockdown. And so she started 100 days. I know there were so many days of lockdown. Well, she soon gave up on that one. So then she called it a monthly challenge. So that, not that she gave up on, she did something every day, but it was,
right.
She changed the title of it because it was like, we're never going to be out of lockdown.
Yeah.
That was too depressing to think about. So, but when you, I think any of the things when you challenge yourself, and we try to make it broad so that it includes both of us, mm-hmm. but also that it, you have to narrow it down. If it's too broad, you never finish. You need to be very specific. So like this, I don't sew. I really don't. I mean, I do a little quilting, but I really don't sew. So that was a challenge, but the piece I'm working on, I'm hoping I'll be able to do some hand embroidery on it, mm-hmm. but I have to get that sewing base on.
Yeah.
But it helps us to, it just makes you think differently. If you're always doing the same thing, it's nice to have a challenge to get you out of yourself. So what was last month was a color challenge. So right. We had to post something every day that made us, that it intrigued us color wise, whether we were dyeing fabric, whether it was, Cheryl likes to play with her food. So she took a picture of her food, I think one day and and made it a pretty picture, but it, and I took the leaves on the forest floor and I played with that a little bit to get a composition that looked nice in my eye. So it was, you know, you think, okay, now what am I going to post today? That's part of the challenge. And how can I make it interesting, not only to me, but to people who are going to look at it? And that makes you think more outside your box.
Okay. They frustrate me.
I wondered.
Well, the stitch alongs, you know, monthly stitch alongs where we're going to get a piece of the puzzle every month. Because I don't get to them. And like you guys doing the daily challenge. See, I'll get to the end of the day. Oh, geez, I forgot to do that. And all right, I'll just do it tomorrow. And then for me, it's all right. Now you've already broken the string. And so you can catch up and then there'll be 2 days. And then I just get frustrated and just say, forget it. And like I've started two or three of these, get a chunk of the pattern every month thing. And the end of the month will come along. It's like, oh man, now I'm 2 months behind. And so it'll just be, forget it. Just forget it. And so I don't see that's, I don't find, and maybe that's my, where I need to change my mental thinking is I need to make a note and say, you know, make a point to do this every day. Because, I mean, I literally, I'll just get to the end of the day and say, oh, geez, nah, never mind. Move on. But I can see when you guys do these challenges that you're getting something out of them. They're making you think. They're making you explore something. And, mm-hmm. yeah.
Well, and so, like, the one I'm working on, I dyed my own fabric for it. And I played with it. I thought, oh, I have this idea. I'm going to do some, I'm going to do buttonhole stitch around this edge, and then I'm going to attach it to my brown cloth, and then I'm going to do some, or maybe I'll do some drawn thread or pulled thread. And I started doing that buttonhole stitch around the edge, and I thought, this will take me forever. I will be at the end of September, and that'll have all I done is one row of buttonhole stitch. And I'm like, no. We've got to find a faster way to do that. So just that one thing I have learned.
Uh-huh.
I can't dawdle on it, or it will end up in the never finished whip pile.
Yeah.
So forcing myself to say, okay, yeah, I'd like to do this, but it's just not going to work for me, at least not right now. I'll store that idea for later, and I'll do something else with this piece.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is, I've discovered when I'm doing these challenges, is I have to think about what I'm going to post the next day. So you're thinking about it the date, like while you're doing your little chores around, and you think, okay, yeah, what am I going to post tomorrow? What can I think about? What can I make this interesting?
Yeah.
So you're thinking ahead, but it's better to post, for me at least, to post first thing in the morning. If I wait till the evening, I'm a morning person. So get up, get my, what I'm going to do, and get that post done.
Mm-hmm.
And it's better for me. Hmm. But the idea is to challenge yourself and to learn something. We're doing the Linen and Threads Mystery Stitch Along, the 2021. Right. I'm trying not to get behind. Okay. So I've stayed caught up so far. So, you know, we'll see what happens when November, December hits. I'm like, oh, and I haven't put the initials in, and I'm thinking in the back of my head, you need to start deciding what initials you're going to put in and get those in. Cause if not, that won't ever get done.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Come January, but I work on it at the beginning of the month. It will be pulled out probably this weekend, and I haven't printed the chart, but I'll print it out and I'll work on that until it's done.
So just so that way you just block it out and say, all right, I'm not stopping till I'm done.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
And I normally don't do a whole lot of those mystery ones because although I like being surprised, I do want to see the whole pattern. I've done several, though. I've done A&G used to have a Stitch of the Month.
Yep.
And Sue Reed did one that I did, and then my guild saw it, and I dyed threads for it. I dyed two sets of threads, and so I did it a total of three times. I still have two of the canvases. One has since disappeared, but but I taught that to my guild, but most of them didn't, they wanted to see the final product. They yeah. didn't want to do it as a mystery.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but yeah, so I think it depends on your personality for those too. Cause if you don't like being surprised, some of those mysteries don't work.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Like, what if I don't like how it looks at the end? What if I don't like cats and she puts a million cats in this program?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Well, that, but like with Brendan, you know, his monthly thing, I started the one last year with the Peacock and actually did finish the Peacock in the center, but it was, you know, well into the year before I got that done. And I was so far behind that, right. You know, I just forget it. And then of course I think, all right, someday I'll finish that, 'cause I liked the design when it was all done. But then I got to the point where I didn't even download the charts. So I got to go back. I really should go back and get all the charts so that someday I can finish it. But, it is a mental thing, and I don't do well with those things, but I see the benefit not doing a stitch along, monthly stitch alongs. Those are, you know, that's one different thing. But what you guys are doing, where you're challenging yourself with some aspect, right, each month.
I've found, like, from doing the 100-day project, I started one in January, and I was working on my art quilt, and I thought, great, 100 days, I'm going to work on this. But I ran into a problem. I think it was about 30 days in or so, I found my pictures boring.
Oh.
And once that hit, I did not want to work on it anymore.
Uh-huh.
It was like, because I felt like, this is not interesting. Who? I don't want to see this. It's the same photo I did yesterday.
Yeah.
And I didn't like that. And that bothered me. So again, but I learned, even by quitting, I learned something,
right,
that, you know, I have to, you know, you have to keep it fresh for myself as much as anybody that I'm going to show it to, but
yeah,
mainly for myself. So I do want to get back to that project, but it's, again, I'll approach it different, in a different way.
Yeah,
When I work on it. So that's that's what I like about those challenges, is they make me learn something about myself and my stitching, and they push me forward. I try to make it just challenging enough that I won't quit, but that I learn, because I think that's another problem. People will take on these challenges. It's like running a marathon. You can run a marathon. I'm like, okay, but they don't do the first steps. You have to be able to run 3 miles before you can run a marathon.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to plan out the whole schedule. I don't know how many weeks you give yourself. I can't remember, like 12 weeks, whatever it is. You plan that whole schedule out. And when that long run comes on, we're always on Saturday. You got a 10-mile long run. You go do that 10-mile long run. But you break it down into those small steps so you can get all the way to the end of the marathon.
Yeah.
And I think that's the same with any of these challenges. And I would even say with our stitching, like when I'm working on like Debbie Rowley's piece, I did one set of crescents and with a little thing in the middle, but now I'm going and putting all those alternating Scotch stitches in first. And I thought about it. I thought, well, do I want to do the, and I thought, no, the crescents are fun. I'm going to wait and save those for last. That's my dessert.
Yep. Yep.
But I break those, I break, like this, 'cause this is a big project. So I'm breaking it down mentally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm breaking it into sections. So once I get those done, and then I'll go and do the next little step, and then I don't ever read through all the instructions. bad about that, but I will do that. I will decide how I'm going to break down the next, because it looks like it's a big chunk in the four corners.
Yeah.
And however she does that, I will break that down mentally. Okay, I'm going to get this much done. I'm going to do this section first, so that way I can do the fun stuff, or I have to get all this done so I can work on this fun stuff.
Yeah.
And then you've got the border on there too, which is I think people, it'd be easy to get burnt out on not getting that little light purple border going around, which is Scotch stitch. Mm-hmm. I will probably figure out where that goes and start adding it, like saying, okay, I'm going to add a length of thread so many Scotch stitches.
Yeah, mindless stitching.
Right, but that's, I think that's part of it. If you break it down, it makes it easier.
Yeah.
To get done, so it doesn't end up living in the, like at my house, living in the basement.
Unfinished. Yeah, yeah. Well, I think that's the case, because I've been thinking about Royal Garden, that once I get the center core done, that I think I'm going to go ahead and do each of the quadrants out to the corner so that I do all those stitches so I have a progression rather than go all the way around and do all the Jessicas and do, you know, all those things. I think I'm going to do each quadrant and make my way around that way.
So, okay, so here's my question. Okay, if you, for me, if I did one quadrant, and I've done this on a piece, at least one piece, I'm like, okay, I know how to do that. And I don't necessarily want to finish the rest of the quadrant.
Oh, now see, that wouldn't happen. No, I'd keep going, yeah.
So you don't get bored with that?
No. Because by doing each quadrant, you're getting all kinds of variety. And then the next one goes faster anyway. So, no, that wouldn't happen. I don't see, no, I would finish it, yeah. But I can see how you would say, oh, no, I got to do this again? No, forget it. Yeah. No, I'll keep going, yeah. But see, for me, for a lot of pieces, it seems like there's a fragile nature to them, in that if you get a piece and you start working on it, and if you start to have trouble, there's a breaking point there, mm-hmm. where you'll set it aside and say, you know, I'm, that's frustrating me. I'll come back to that, and in a lot of cases, you never do,
right?
And you get stopped by that one stitch or that one area that frustrated you, and there's a mental fight to get through that. That it, and I think you suggest a good way. Do stuff this is the wrong word, but do stuff that's painful to stitch, and save the good stuff for dessert. And you know, make yourself do things that you find boring, just to get to the fun stuff. And right. and do it in pieces, like backstitching and cross stitch. Do it as you go along, because I would suggest the majority of people who don't do it as they go along get to the end and go, oh geez, now I got to go back and do all that. Forget it. I'm not going to do
right.
it. Yeah.
Right. And or if it's like I have a piece, yeah, I want to get it done, I want to get it done before the end of the year, but I'm at a spot where it's just killing me.
Yeah.
So, but I've decided I'm going to get to a certain point on Royal Garden, probably get all these crescents in. And then I don't know what that little thing is there. It looks like a some sort of Amadeus. Anyway, get that in. And then I'm going to put it aside because I know I'll get back to this one.
Yeah.
And try to work and work for maybe a day, a week on the other piece. This just, but that one might require that I work on it consistently so I can get this stitch so I can finish it. But, but you know, if not, it's going to languish and I love it and I want to have it hanging. So it's like, okay, I've got to just get over this mental block and I've got to just kind of force myself to say, okay, one night a week, I'm going to work on this.
Yeah. Till you get past it. Yeah. There's a fragile, there's a fragile point that if you don't fight past it, I think at least it happens for me in a lot of them. If you don't fight past it, it just goes in the pile.
Right.
And that's a way to do it. Okay, I'm going to force myself to work on this a little bit, and then you'll get to a point where then you see the end, or you see, all right, okay, that's over with. I don't have to do that anymore, and off you go. And then I think you get renewed energy and you charge right to the end. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So I don't know. First, I got to get the canvas squared up.
well, good. And it's a, this is a fun piece. It is a fun piece to stitch.
Right.
It's a little challenging. It has a little bit of challenge in it, but that's good. You know, that's good for your brain.
Yep. Oh yeah. Yeah. No, I'm enjoying the piece. I just got to, Yeah, I just saw that just in the right light, and that's got to get squared up. I got to get that. So, but I'm, you know, just talking about it here, that tape, I should have taken the tape off. Yep. So we'll give it a run.
Yep. All right. Let us know. Let us know.
Oh, yeah. I will be reporting in. I will. All right. We got to, holy smokes. Yeah. It's time to stop.
No.
Jeez.
All right.
How'd that happen? Tonight, join us. Join us for the tour from Gallery 76. It's going to be fun. Kimberly Jolly, Fat Quarter Shop, is our guest Sunday. No show Friday. No show Friday. Don't send me email saying, where's the show? Because
your computer's going to be off and you're going to be just relaxing.
That's right. Not
beverage, you know. And yep. Stitching.
That's right. Yep. Machines are off. That's it. All right. Thanks for listening.